episode 622, for April 14th, 2020. Spoken for by Evan Kennedy. Rated PG-13. New and returning, and welcome to Podcastle. I'm Jen Albert, Podcastle's co-editor and your host today. I hope you're all keeping well, taking care of yourselves, and staying home if you can. We're happy to be here for you each and every week. Today we have a story that will hopefully take your mind off the difficult times. This one's got it all. Romance, magic, people riding dragons into battle. Just what you'd expect here at the castle. We're very proud to present Spoken For, written by Evan Kennedy. This story is a Podcastle original. Evan Kennedy is an Alabama native who reads so many fantasy novels that it took him twice as long as normal to finish his PhD in psychology. He has been previously published in Andromeda Spaceway magazine and Daily Science Fiction. He lives in Alabama with his wife and his passive-aggressive rescue dog. Your reader today is a voice many of you will know well, Khalida Muhammad Ali, my former co-editor and a Castle regular. Khalida lives in Houston, Texas with her husband and three children. By day, she works as a breast oncology nurse. At all other times, she juggles, none too successfully, writing, reading, gaming, and gardening. She has written one novel entitled An Unproductive Woman, available on Amazon. She has also been published in many short fiction markets, including Escape Pod, Diabolical Plots, and Faya. Of her alter ego, Kay from the planet Vega, it is rumored that she owns a time machine and knows the secret to long youth. Khalida can be found online at Khalida.com and on Twitter at Khalida. That's K-H-A-A-L-I-G-A-H. Are you ready to get going? Saddle up your flying worm and hop aboard with your one true love and enjoy the story.
Spoken For by Evan Kennedy. Read by Khalida Muhammad Ali. 25 years after the magic came back, Auden's wife got turned to stone. It was the dog's fault. A cockatrice had been wandering Harlan County for the past few weeks, ever since some damn fool two towns over let a cock's egg hatch instead of chucking it backwards over the roof. Auden and Ella Ree had dealt with the trice before, though, and they knew all the new time tricks. Usually, when monsters were about, they'd lock up the goats and chickens and then stay inside with the curtains pulled till the last beast passed them by. But this time they couldn't find the dog, and Ella Ree went back out to look for it. Auden tried to stop her, observed she didn't have a lick of sense risking her life for some dumb mutt. But she grinned, told him she loved that mutt, and he didn't know a thing about love. Then she went out anyway. She was always hammerheaded, that woman. It was what he loved about her. Auden didn't go after her. He remembered the dragon wards they taught him in the army, but that was 20 years ago. He wasn't some wizard who could sweet-talk a trice. His brother Ty even told him as much when Auden turned up the next day with Ella Ree under a sheet in the wagon, bored stiff and glassy-eyed. "You can't blame yourself," Ty said, awkward in the face of his brother's grief. Auden nodded, but his ham and okra grew cold on the table as he stared out at the cloth-covered shape in the wagon. You learn to stick together when you're the only black kids in the county, so he and Ty were always close, but this was something he couldn't talk about, even with family. "Be obliged if you could look after the animals while I'm away. Might be a spell." "Gonna go see the shaman?" Ty ventured. Auden frowned and lifted one hand to pull at his beard, but his eyes never left the window. "Reckon so." 5 years after the magic came back, Auden Runeshot returned from the war. He'd been so young before, just a stupid kid who lied about his age so they'd let him slay dragons. Pop named him James for the apostle, and Mama called him Auden for the poet. So when they died in the rift that destroyed Nashville, Jimmy put his name on the line at the recruiter's office in Lexington, James Auden Clay, with a flourish, and went off to make their deaths mean something. But war changes skinny kids from Appalachia, and not just in their bodies. The new times wore away at names somehow, and in any case, the boys in the 8th Mounted Division all got nicknames. You had to be a bit touched to want to be an Ichneumon rider, but they were still just kids fresh off the Xbox, and half of them were dead inside a year. The kid from Appalachia found he was better prepared than most. His old man pulled him off the computer every other weekend to go hunting and fishing and camping, and while Jimmy was on his phone the whole time, he still learned a thing or two. Hunting dragons wasn't so different from boars once you got past the scales and the teeth and the fire. Most of the 8th wanted to dance with the worms, the way the Ichneumon did. Sway and striking like a giant mongoose. The boys figured they'd take up their swords and do the same, but Jimmy was an old-timey kind of guy and knew he'd be useless with a sword. The drones and the cruise missiles were long dead, true, but the older stuff still worked, and getting a rifle to fire wasn't too hard, as long as you learned to mind your manners with the spirits. So Jimmy was patient. He would take the high ground, just like Pop taught him, then lie down, check the wind, and whisper some sweet talking. Finally, he'd exhale and put a rune carved bullet right through the monster's eye. They never saw him coming, thanks to his kinna's sharp nose for dragon flesh, and his sweet talking was good enough that the gun never jammed. The 8th tangled with gray worms that could teleport through fog, and gecko-patterned swamp worms that swam in earth like a fish in water, and huge acid-spitting black worms with their 6 unblinking compound eyes, and Jimmy shot them all the same. He killed more dragons than anybody, they knew, and before long, sweet little Jimmy Clay from Kentucky had a new name. He had worried nobody would understand him back in Harlan County, but he found the new times had worked their magic on Appalachia, too. His brother Ty, for one, wasn't the plump little 12-year-old he'd left behind with his grandparents, but a gangly teenager going to dances and mooning over girls. Auden wanted to skip the welcome home hero's shindig, but Ty insisted, and that's where he first saw Ellery Goldenhair. She'd been Ellery Chatham when he left, a willowy kid, shy and quiet behind a tangled mass of blonde hair. She was only 16 now, but the new times were working for her already. She'd grown up and filled out, and she could talk circles around the boys. When she combed out her tangles, her hair shone like the sun, and by the time they started calling her golden hair, she was already on her way to being the prettiest girl in Lexington. Ty noticed Auden staring at her and laughed. "That's Ellery of golden hair. Ain't she a fine piece of creation?" Auden gave him a sidelong glare, but Ty rattled on with a younger brother's shamelessness. "Ain't no harm in looking. Every boy in the state's in love with Ellery, but..." And here he gave a mournful sigh. "She's off limits, already spoken for." When Auden asked who, Ty said it was some city boy from Richmond, come over the mountains to make rifles for the war, and richer than the gods. Auden asked Ellery for a dance, and she accepted. Plenty of boys asked her to dance that night, but none were quite so dashing or handsome as the dark man in the cavalry fatigues, because once you'd gone toe-to-toe with a charging ice worm and put a bullet through its neck gills, a little thing like an engagement wasn't going to stop you. He'd met her fiancé that night, too. Fulton Gunmaker was tall and pale and clean-shaven, where Auden was short and dark and bearded, and he carried himself like a guy who had never considered how to kill a dragon. Even so, the Gunmaker was an impressive man. even before you figured in the fact that he was only 23 and already owned half of Richmond. And of course, it didn't hurt that he was white. Here in this new time world, it would have been nice to believe that didn't matter. But later on, more than a few people would whisper behind their hands when they saw Ella Goldenhair being courted by a black man. Fulton and Auden shook hands with the decorum of two southern gentlemen who are about to calmly remove their coats before shooting each other in the heart. 25 years after the magic came back, Auden went to see the shaman. The old wizard lived on the island on the other side of Kentenia Bay, and sunlight glinted off the water in the old gorge as Auden hefted his wife's stone body into the rowboat. He winced as he straightened, stretching his back, and heard his spine crack as he regarded the bay, trying to remember how many years had it been since the sea came to Harlan County. The valley had once been deep and wide and all lit up with the red gold of autumn, but the men who could remember those days were few and far between, he knew. It made him feel tired. His pawpaw had been over twice the age Auden was now before he kicked the bucket, but that was back in the old times. Maybe these days 41 was when you started being an old man. It was a short journey, but the island's bank was steep and slick with leaves. The carmine-streaked wake robins grasped at his legs with their fingery petals, murmuring toneless flower songs, and his toes went numb. It took Auden 20 minutes to disembark with Ellery on his back, and another hour to scale the carved earth stair to the shaman's cabin. But the upshot was the shaman heard him coming and had the workbench cleared off. The portly man in the camouflage bandana examined Ella Ree over his mirrored sunglasses, grease-stained fingers probing at her marble face, while Auden stood by feeling antsy and trying not to show it. "Now, you gotta be honest with me here. You try any of them herbal rituals before you come to me?" the shaman asked, fixing Auden with his permanently dilated left eye. "Mandrake? Peony? Any of that?" Auden shook his head. "No, just snowdrop tea and some low wards." The shaman looked at him for a moment longer, trying to gauge his honesty, then nodded grimly as he went back to the body. "Good. Those are the scary ones, and they don't work anyhow. Gotta leave curses to professionals. The mandrake will whisper to you, so you gotta be careful or you'll go touched. And can't go messing with peony, or we'll have worse than trice running around these mountains. Saw a case about 20 years back. Old boy down Chattanooga way ate some peony. You believe that? It called up demon, of course. Tore out through his left eye, poor bastard." Auden nodded, mesmerized by the wobble of the old wizard's beard, while his mind raged. The shaman was babbling old war stories while his Ellery lay frozen on the table. Then he realized he'd missed something.
"What?"
"I said, you ain't gotta look so down. You just have to kiss her. There's magic in soulmate's kiss. Heavy stuff. She'll be good as new."
Auden swallowed. Yesterday he had slept next to her all night, trying to warm her, feeling her night-cooled marble skin scratch at his arms. The true love's kiss was the first thing he tried, on her forehead and cheeks and mouth, desperate to soothe away the terror in her eyes. "I already tried," he said, like ripping off a band-aid. The shaman's eyebrows went up.
"You are her husband, ain't you?"
"I am," said Auden.
"Didn't have nothing on your lips?"
Auden felt his mouth tighten.
"No." "You sure you got full mouth contact?" the shaman asked. "Full coverage. The placement can be hard when their mouths are..."
"I'm sure," Auden snapped. There was a long moment. Then Auden asked, "What does that mean?" The shaman took a deep breath, then let it out. Then his mouth crooked sideways, apologetic.
Means you ain't her true love.
6 years after the magic came back, Auden and Ellery had their first kiss. He started writing her letters in the months after they met. The courier came to Lexington once a week to deliver goods to the open-air markets lining I-75, and each time he dropped off another thick envelope. Ellery found them filled with thrilling war stories, playful flirtation, and gentle wit, and soon she looked forward to them. She wrote back, laughing and cajoling and fighting, asking question after question. He claimed he loved her, but she scoffed, saying that he might know how to kill dragons, but clearly knew nothing about love. She would reread them while stretched across the bed with her golden hair streaming out around her, face flushed and heart pounding as she read about how much he wanted her. She told herself she should throw the letters out, but it was sexy and it was dangerous, and each Friday when she rose before the sun, reading his words alone in the darkness, felt like the most romantic thing in the world. He came to see her at midwinter. She danced with other men, but she felt his gaze on her the whole time, and when she went upstairs to the powder room, he followed. When he kissed her, she twined her arms around his neck and kissed him back, pressing her body against him. Fulton was a nice man, but she was 17, and no one had ever kissed her this way, this completely, as if they were trying to disappear into her. She felt his hands on her body, and she gasped, her mind racing, feeling sure they were going to do all the things he wrote in his letters. And that's when Fulton walked in. The day the magic came back, Fulton Applebaum was an 18-year-old factory line worker from Carytown on the night shift at the foundry. There was an old folding of the air, a slip-sliding lurch, like a penny on the tracks of the world, and that was that. The manager emerged from his office to complain that the internet was down and found his workers gaping out the front window at the dryads emerging from trees in the parking lot medians. Fulton pressed against the window, craning his neck to get a better view of the 20-foot-tall, jackal-headed man tromping through the parking lot with screaming, ghostly figures chained to his belt. People began pulling out their phones, waving them aloft and uttering strangled cries when they couldn't find a signal. Fulton held down the power button of his old Nokia, whispering, "Please, please, please." And, as he wished, he felt wings flutter past his left shoulder, and his left eye gave the ghost of an ache. Then he heard a voice in his head saying, "Well, since you asked so nicely, sugar," and his mind flooded with words in some unknown language. He spoke them aloud, and instantly his phone flickered to life with a cheerful bleep. He had full bars and no one to call. While his co-workers went home to check on their families, Fulton jogged down to the museum, broke the plate glass door with his elbow, and headed for the military history wing. He hauled weapons out to the back lot by the armful, trying to ignore the black lightning forking past swirling purple rifts in the sky. He tested them all, taking notes on his phone about functioning technology and word pronunciation. The invisible creature stayed with him, her laughing bell voice lilting in his head, and within a few hours, he had a budding grimoire on his cell phone. Once he was satisfied, he headed back to the foundry, fired up the line, and worked through the night. 2 days later, Fulton drove down East Broad Street with a pallet of flintlock rifles in his uncle's old pickup. He wouldn't accept paper money, but after 2 days in the new time world, people were more than willing to barter for a working gun. And when he was finished, his truck bed was stacked high with bottled water, canned food, toiletries, medicine, batteries, gasoline, tools, and first aid. 3 weeks later, when Fulton's old boss came to check on the factory, he found two burly men armed with rune-carved muskets and dilated eyes guarding the front door. Fulton ushered the man into his office and cut him a deal that let him stay on as a junior partner. 2 years later, Fulton, the gunmaker, was the richest man in Virginia. But money and power wasn't much good if you didn't have anybody to spend it on. So when Fulton met Ella Ree with the golden hair, he knew she was the love of his life. The night he found her kissing another man, he didn't shout or curse or make a scene. He simply asked if she loved him.
"I don't think I know anything about love," she admitted.
Fulton's brows knitted. Another man might have given his opinions on love, and she might have believed it, because he was her fiancé, and despite everything, she was still only 17. But instead, Fulton took her hands, and when he spoke, his voice was even and earnest, if a little firm.
"I don't want you to love me because I said so. I want you to know for yourself. I just know I love you. And if you can love me too, I'm gonna marry you."
She looked into his eyes and then she kissed him completely, as if she were trying to disappear into him. 25 years after the magic came back, Auden loaded Ellery's body in the wagon and set off for Richmond. He considered taking the pickup truck, but it didn't run like it used to, and the older he got, the less spirits loved him. They were fickle. And besides, revving an internal combustion engine in an enchanted forest was a good way to get you eviscerated by some vengeful fey god. When he'd been a young man, the mountain passes hadn't been safe, but there had been less to worry about. The 8th Mounted Division zigzagged the Appalachians 100 times, chasing dragons around, and they feared neither gods nor monsters. But they were also badass gun-toting warlocks astride toothy weasels the size of cars. Auden was an old man now, maybe, and more than once he wondered if the world itself was bigger than it had been when he was 21 and riding to Richmond to stop a wedding. A hag followed him for the first few days, her skinless body flitting between trees in his peripheral vision. But he slept with a mason jar by his mouth so she couldn't steal his breath, and eventually she gave up. In the ruins of Abingdon, he encountered a shadow boy and spent a nerve-wracking evening hiding on a roof and muttering words he disbelieved to confuse the scent of his soul. At night, he would lie awake staring into the darkness as the duende lobbed pebbles over his wards, chattering in fairy falsetto Spanish and laughing uproariously when they scored a hit. There were rumors the bird goddess, Camulats, who ate the heads of the first people, was nesting in the Appalachians these days, but thankfully he didn't see any sign of her. By the time he made it to Richmond, over 2 weeks had passed, not counting the time he made eye contact with a Cheneque, and spent 3 days wandering in the jungle out of time, his head filled with the murdered creature's guttural Nahuatl wails. He was worn thin when he pulled the wagon up to the gunmaker's mansion, and with his stomach turning, trudged up the wide front steps to knock on the door. 7 years after the magic came back, Auden told Ella Ree she shouldn't get married because he was in love with her. He rode 3 hard days from Harlan and arrived that very morning. By the time he made it to the church, she was already decked out in her white dress. And if anyone still doubted she was the prettiest girl in Kentucky, and maybe Virginia too, they couldn't doubt it any longer. She was radiant on her wedding day. She even looked beautiful when she was angry, mouth agape as she watched Auden clamber through the dressing room window. "You don't know anything about love, Auden." He was undeterred, though his blue jeans were still askew from scaling the drainpipe. "I've always loved you. I ain't stopped thinking about you in 2 years. I rode here to win you back." "And that's what you think love is? Climbing mountains?" She threw up her hands. "I'm not a woman to you. I'm a dragon you want to slay." Auden was angry now, too.
She could see he hadn't expected this would be so hard. He was still the soldier. The Kinna rider, bursting in to save the day. He hadn't considered that she might not need saving. "Well, what do you think love is?" he said. She was ready for this, though. She'd been thinking about it for months, like practicing in the bathroom mirror, her chin tipped up. It's stability, contentment. It's deciding what you want your life to be and finding it. But he was closer now, and she faltered. The war had worked countless wards for quietus and stillness into his body, and nowadays it was somehow hard to see him moving. Abruptly, he was right before her, magnetic with his nearness. "You don't want me to be in your life?" That gave her pause because she hadn't thought of it in those terms. Maybe you couldn't think of everything when you were just 18, but she realized she didn't want him to go away. He was still Auden, her Auden, sexy and brave and wild, and abruptly she couldn't remember what she'd spent the last year telling herself. He saw her pause, and he was closer, so close she could feel his heat. He whispered, "You are everything I want my life to be." And that was that. 25 years after the magic came back, Auden knocked on the door of the gunmaker's mansion. He expected a squire or handmaiden, but no one came. He thought about turning back, but there was nowhere else to look, and his Ella was in the wagon screaming in stone, so he knocked again. Still no one came, so he tried the knob and found it unlocked. The lights were off in the foyer, but Auden hadn't passed over the Appalachians to run from the dark. He went inside. He could hear voices, but nobody answered when he called, so he loosened his saber in its scabbard and did some sweet talking, feeling his free hand drag with the weight of magic. But when he stalked across the entry hall on moccasin feet and made it to the den, he saw no dragon to slay, only the gunmaker lying back in a voluminous lazy boy in front of the TV. The massive screen was tilted askew, its cord snaking across the floor to a raw wire dangling in the carpet. Spirit lights flickered behind the screen, and their odd inhuman phonemes drifted through the room like a left-hand language of men. "I know you're there," the gunmaker drawled, but Auden didn't reply because he could make out the TV now and could see it was his wife, or close to it. Ellery golden hair before the strands of gray and the laughing lines. Spirits could try to copy faces, but they were thought beasts, and to them one man's skin was as good as another. They needed specific instructions to pull off a fax this good. Auden thought her eyes were too far apart, her smile a tad too wide, but otherwise the gunmaker had captured his wife's likeness perfectly, recalling the angles of her face and the curve of her hip. Auden decided not to dwell on it, then dwelt on it all the same. "She left me," the gunmaker was saying. "If you're looking for Connie, she don't live here no more, the kids neither." Auden found his voice, tearing his eyes away from the spirit facts of his wife on the screen. "Not here to see Connie," he rasped, and he wondered when his voice had started sounding so tired and so old. The gunmaker arched his back, craning against the gnawed hide to examine Auden upside down. Then his eyes widened and he spun, stumbling to his feet, an empty mug falling from the side table and shattering on the floor. "Is that you, Auden?" Auden nodded, finding himself unable to meet the gunmaker's eyes. "Hiya, Fulton. What are you doing here?" Auden expected the man to slur and stumble like a drunk, but he could sense now that this wasn't the case. For the gunmaker was focused, sharp, his twitching fingers teasing Auden's heart apart at the seams, and there was no color in his left eye. Auden swallowed, studying him. If their positions had been reversed, if Ella Ree chose Fulton instead, he wondered, would this be him, or would he have gotten over her and moved on? The answer was like a lead fishing weight hooked in his heart. But he took a deep breath and said what he had to say. I need you to kiss my wife. 13 years after the magic came back, Auden and Ellery had the worst fight of their lives. They stopped trying for a baby after the third miscarriage. If it had just been a matter of trying to get pregnant, they could have gone on trying for ages, but they couldn't stomach the thought of going through 9 more soul-crushing months. The next day, Auden flagged down the horseback librarian and found some wards against fertility. He spoke the words alone that night in the shower, cupping his testicles. When the spirits answered, he felt a dull ache, mingled heartbreak and relief, and a kind of horrible guilt. As he sat there under the dribbling water, he was struck by the absurdity of the moment, a ridiculous anticlimax, and hopes and dreams of 6 years of marriage dashed by Auden in the shower, playing with himself. When he told Ellery, she just nodded, not looking away from the washing, and he stood next to her, taking the dishes and drying them before putting them away in the cupboard. They were close enough that their shoulders were touching, but they didn't say anything, and Auden could feel the space between them filling up with the 3 baby girls they lost. It took another year before he got frustrated enough to confront her with the fact that they never talked anymore. "What do you expect me to say?" she snapped, because she was frustrated too, and she didn't know how to get her husband back. "Something," he yelled. "Anything. They're gone. We gotta move on." But bringing up the children was a mistake, because she felt the loss even more secretly than he did, treasured her splinter of pain. She glimpsed their echoes still, a baby's wail or eye corner flashes of tiny running forms, and she would still rise from bed to check the empty hallway when she heard tiny shoes patter on the old hardwood. They yelled at each other, their left pupils stretching wide to slivers of color around empty black holes as they weaved curses through the old house, the despair and pain hanging from every door frame like translucent streamers, screaming and crying and arguing through a whole day and into the night. And afterwards, Auden went to sleep on the couch, feeling angry and sick. It was almost 3 in the morning when Ellery made a ward knife of her hand and cut through the tangled weave of their hexes. Working her way to him, wordlessly, she wiped the clinging spirits from his body, then slid under his arms and pressed close against his side. "I'm sorry," he said after a moment. "I love you." "You don't know a thing about love," she murmured, but she held him tighter, and for the first time in over a year, she fell asleep in his arms. The next morning it wasn't fixed, but somehow the edges weren't quite so jagged. 25 years after the magic came back, Auden and the gunmaker stood over Ellery's body, frozen on the couch. "Makes sense," the gunmaker muttered. He was excited, but Auden had expected as much. Whatever their differences, he and Fulton Gunmaker had never lied about what they had wanted, and there was no reason for that to change now. Auden understood what it was like to be in love with Ellery Goldenhair. But all the same, it didn't stop him from feeling the urge to strangle this man who was so deliriously fated to love his wife. "Is she aware of us? Of what's going on?" the gunmaker asked, an inventor's curiosity as poor cover for a lover's hesitance. Auden shook his head. "Don't rightly know. The shaman back in Harlan thought so. Hard to be sure." Fulton nodded, his gaze still on Ella's face. "Best to, do it quick then, I suppose?" He perched on the couch next to her, his face half shadowed from the flickering television. "Probably so," Auden managed, his stomach roiling as he watched Fulton lean down between Ellery's shielding arms. Then Fulton brushed his lips against hers. It was immediately obvious it was going to work. All 3 of them felt it. The spirits felt it. Everyone in Glen Allen probably felt it. Decades of power and life and true love released all in one moment. Ellery's body stirred, slowly at first. Then the stiffness worked from her limbs as her lips responded, deepening the kiss, and her outstretched arms curled down, tightening around his neck, pulling him against her, and he kissed her fiercely as the magic worked through her body, breaking the curse with the purity of his affection. And that's when Auden left. He threw his things into the wagon, wadding the tarp and stuffing it under the seat with shaking hands, and he was so blinded by tears that he had to grope for the reins. He barely managed to whistle to the horse between racking sobs, and they moved off along the cracked asphalt toward the long, deadly journey back to Harlan, trailing spirit slaves of despair on long chains. He went 100 yards before he heard Ellery calling his name. He turned in his seat, one hand covering his mouth, and he could see her sprinting after him, her ratty blue hoodie flapping behind her as she ran. He jerked the horse to a stop and struggled down from the wagon, tears streaming down his face, and then she was in his arms, holding him too tight, and her voice whispered in his ear. Auden, honey, my Auden, you saved me. Oh, God, you saved me. He bit his lip so hard he feared it might bleed. After a moment, Auden gathered his strength and pulled away. She was looking up at him, her eyes shining, and she touched his face, smoothing away tears. Oh, honey, what's wrong? Where are you going? Fulton. He... Auden swallowed hard, speaking through hitching breaths. He loves you. More. He gritted his teeth, screwing his eyes shut so he wouldn't have to see how beautiful she was, because this was the last time he would ever see her, and it hurt too much to say, but he said it anyway. More than I do. You should be with him. You always should have been with him. There was a pause, and when he opened his eyes again, her gaze scalded him. Maybe so, but you are my husband. I told him that. He understands. Auden shook his head, feeling more tears rising in his throat. No, 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 no. I can't hold you back from your destiny. Not anymore. He gritted his teeth. The way we met, the way I seduced you, the kids... Oh, God, our baby girls. And she winced at this, but he barreled on, reckless. It was a sign. It was all a sign. I was getting punished. And what about Fulton? You saw how he is? He pulled back from her again, farther this time. He loves you. She stood there for a long moment, frowning at him. Then she crossed her arms. All these years and you still don't know a thing about love. Auden blinked. What? That's still what you think love is? You and Fulton both. Whoever cares, the best wins. If you follow the rules and say the right things at all the right times, that you can earn it. She was moving toward him now, reaching up to cup his cheeks, and he was powerless to stop her. What about what I want? You want Fulton. He's your... Auden swallowed. He's your true love. You wouldn't have been happier with him, better off. She shook her head, giving him that half smile. I would have been happy with Fulton, but that doesn't matter now. She pressed closer to him, her elbows bending against his chest as she moved into his arms, and he held her, instinctive. I chose you, Auden, she said. I told you the day you climbed through that church window. It's about choosing to love someone no matter what. I'm not going to let some magic tell me who I have to be with. You don't have to be good enough for me. Don't have to slay any dragons, climb any mountains. Just love me the best you know how. Because that's how I love you. He swallowed hard, looking down at his wife, at the way her eyes searched his face, and he kissed her then, long and slow and gentle. They stood there for a long time,
before they mounted the wagon and set off back towards Harlan County. On the way home, they were ensnared by the bird goddess Camulots, who ate the heads of the first people, and she tried to have them sacrificed in the ziggurat atop Mount Rogers, but found she had to let them go instead, because even her obsidian teeth turned aside blunted on the skin of those touched by true love.
And welcome back. This is what Evan has to say about his story. I'm fascinated by the way that capital T true love of fairy tales seems to conflict with my real-life experience, where the best relationships sidestep high drama in favor of quiet, day-to-day self-sacrifice. This story was my way of playing with the rules behind the idea of a true love's kiss, in order to examine the gap between the magical image of a happily ever after and the intentional effort required for real-world relationships. Thanks for that, Evan. For my part, I find the brand of romance here particularly refreshing. As someone with more than one romantic partner myself, I appreciate the way it overturns the trope of the one true love and focuses on the work that partnership takes. In many stories, a love triangle of this sort might come to blows, but here the men react to the conflict with maturity. Both Auden and Fulton clearly love Ellery and clearly struggle with their feelings for her, but they're not selfish or possessive. To both, loving Ellery means respecting her autonomy and being genuinely interested in her happiness. And that's a beautiful thing. Well, that was our show this week. If you like what you heard here, please head over to patreon.com/EAPodcasts and subscribe. I know many of you are probably hurting in a financial sense right now, and we completely get being strapped for cash. If that's the case, we'd be really grateful if you would support us in other ways. Share or talk about our episodes on social media, and tell us there how you felt about a story. Review us on iTunes, or talk about our stories on your own online spaces. We especially appreciate reviews of our original stories like this one. The Escape Artists podcasts are among what is now just a handful of CIFL-qualifying, pro-paying speculative fiction markets, and reviews mean a ton to us. With your unwavering support, financial or otherwise, the Escape Artists family has seen so many successes over the years. Why, just this week, our sister podcast, Escape Pod, was even nominated for the Hugo Award. Congrats, big sis. We thank each and every one of you for listening and for keeping us going over the years. On behalf of everyone here at Podcastle, our audio engineer Peter Baravesh, our forum moderator Aussie Cat, our social media manager Matt Dovey, our assistant editor and regular host Setsu Uzume, my co-editor Sheree Clark, and myself, Jen Albert, along with our fantastic first readers, Matt Dovey, Aidan Doyle, Amelia Harrington, Kai Hudson, Devin Martin, Catherine McMahon, Ace Radcliffe, Julian Jarboe, Craig Jackson, Julia Pat, Hamilton Perez, and Eleanor Wood, thank you for letting us share another story with you. But for now, we've got to fly. We'll be back next week with another tale. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll see you then. Podcastle is a part of Escape Artists Incorporated and is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Please feel free to share it, but don't sell or change it.